Game on 2FM. With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein, your way.
Thank you, Jan. This is John Kenny. It's Tuesday, the 29th of June. This is Game On. Coming up today after Magic Monday at the Euros, Conan Byrne and Tony O'Donoghue have live updates for us as England versus Germany enters the second half, I should say. Can it match last night's game for the drama? I doubt it.
Mbappé gegen Sommer. Mbappé! Oder weggecheckt. Was ist los? Ja! Ja! Er zählt! Der Treffer zählt! Die Schweiz steht im Viertelfinale!
Yeah, yeah, that's right. We'll hear from the newly appointed captain, Conor Murray, as his Lions troops touch down in South Africa.
Warren came up to me before we had our cap ceremony and asked, did I want to take over as tour captain? And answered straight away, yes, that'd be brilliant.
Plus, a Getty football tips, all-star Conor Sweeney on bringing the success of 2020, hopefully, into the 2021 championship.
30 seconds to go. This will be some equaliser. Conor Sweeney can put this over the bar. From the sideline. It's floating in. It's curling in. It's off the post. And it's over the bar.
Marty and Fine Flow and all that to come, but plus the rest of the day's action. You can text us now on 51552. That's 51552. Or you can tweet alternatively at Game On 2FM.
Play the game.
The sound.
Now we're up and running. You can text us to set 51552, 51552, or tweet at Game On 2FM. Into the second half at Wembley Stadium. England versus Germany in the last 16 of the Euros. Conan Byrne is live in studio. Tony O'Donoghue is watching the game for us. Tony.
Yeah, we're 3 minutes into the second half. It's England nil, Germany nil. An intriguing first half, you'd have to say, with quite a few chances on both sides. England had a very shaky start to the game. Maybe it was the formation, because certainly it was a very cautious... Oh, what a save there from Pickford. Cautious opening to Germany. That's Pickford's second big moment of the game, because in that first half, he originally had to save an effort that Havertz had set up, and Werner had a chance, and Pickford made a great save. That was when Germany had sort of taken back control, you might say, of the game. Rice had been a yellow carded for an early foul on the edge of the box. Havertz shot against the wall. Sterling had a shot that Neuer saved, but now Pickford has come back into the action with a brilliant save to keep the score at 0-0. Just before the halftime whistle, Harry Kane had a chance put through by Sterling. A poor touch from Kane, and Hummels cleared the danger. Kane doesn't look fit. He doesn't look sharp. He doesn't look focused. And we were wondering, would England think of making even a halftime substitution, because it has been poor from them. And of course, they have a very defensive formation, but on the bench they have Grealish, they have Foden, they have Mount, they have Sancho, and they'll be certainly knocked back by that effort on goal there early in the second half from Havertz that Pickford saved. But it's certainly an interesting game. Plenty of action, plenty of chances on both sides. But, you know, you always think about England and Germany. You think about 1996 and penalties. The deadlock may be maintained for a little while longer. And if it does go to extra time, they'll both start thinking about the penalties again, won't they?
Of course they will. Stay with us, Tony. Conan Byrne is joining me in studio as well. Conan, you've obviously had a look at the first half as well. Suggesting that Germany looked pretty sloppy in that first half.
Yeah, perhaps. I thought they were very good in the opening 10 minutes. England couldn't get out. The Germans started really, really well. Their press was really impressive. England just couldn't get out of their own half, and they were reverting to long balls, which weren't working. And as I counted in the first 30 minutes, Kane had only two touches of the ball, and both of them weren't very great touches either. So, in fairness to England, they came into it after this, and Harry Maguire was very effective driving runs into midfield, creating an overload for Calvin Phillips, who I feel hasn't had the best of guess the games himself. He hasn't got on the ball as much as he would have liked, and as much as he did in the opening three qualifying games. They've been not bad. Saka has done really, really well down Germany's left hive. He's caused Gossens and Antonio Rudiger some problems. Germany giving away needless fouls. Yeah, I think Gareth said it would have been very, very happy at halftime. But obviously Pickford saved there as put Germany in the ascendancy in the opening few minutes of the second half. So it'll be interesting to see how things go.
It's not a great German side, we know that as well. They're probably a bit on the wane. Lowe is on his way out as well. England, do you think they're just a little bit too conservative in their formation lineup? Trippier and Shaw on both wings?
I think Trippier's done okay. He's got some very, very good balls into the box. He created a wonderful chance for Harry Maguire in the 32nd minute. I think the winning of the game will be the impact of the substitutes. I know Tony was referring to it there, but if you have the likes of Phil Foden, Marcus Rashford, Jack Grealish, Jadon Sancho, Jude Bellingham all to come off the bench for possibility to come off the bench for England. But then if you look at the pace of Serge Gnabry, very interesting to see if young Jamal Musiala is, if he comes off the bench. He's the youngest Bayern Munich player to play for the club, but he actually has got two under 21 caps for England, and it's like a Jack Grealish Declan Rice situation going on there. So it'll be interesting to see if he comes on and changes things for Germany.
How do you see it going, Tony, over the next while? It's still stalemate.
Yeah, and it depends. I think the substitutions could be a big deal, all right. What's very interesting for me as well, though, is that the defensive midfielders, if you like, both Rice and Phillips are already on a yellow card from the first half. And, you know, if they're the ones that are supposed to keep the lid on the defence, the three-man defence, the five-man defence, if you want to look at it that way, to be carrying yellow cards into a game that could go beyond the 90 minutes, could go into extra time, that could be significant.
Yeah, it's half chances, really, in this game, Tony. I know you alluded to Havertz effort there in a few moments ago. Fantastic save from Jordan Pickford. You'd know, expect him to save it though, because it was pretty central, but a good stop. Having said that, but they're all pretty half chances in this game, really, isn't it?
Yeah, nothing kind of a clear cut. But it's interesting that Havertz has been finding those gaps, and Werner's pace has been really significant, and he's tested the England the three centre halves. But yeah, from a German point of view, you know, they were looking at how to set up for this game, how it would affect the way England were going to come on. I mean, the fact that England have home advantage should be significant, you would think. But Gareth Southgate has been ultra cautious. Now, they've had three clean sheets so far, so maybe he's right. But, you know, picking the five-man defence, if you like, and then the two very much holding midfielders in Phillips and Rice, they were at sixes and sevens at the beginning of the game and looked very shaky. They played their way back into it. But now, again, the second half, a mirror of the first in a way, that Germany have started the much better side. And another chance for them here. Ball comes into the box and Pickford has to punch away, as he does. England just about clear from the edge of their box.
There's one line came in from the Up to Joe stats here, Conan. Only Kevin De Bruyne has created more chances than Trippier at the 2018 World Cup and Euro 2020 combined. Nine of those setting up shots for Harry Maguire.
Yeah, as I said there, he created a wonderful opportunity down the left hand, Germany's left hand side. He got in behind Gosens, the Atalanta fullback, stood up a wonderful ball for Harry Maguire, and I was very, very disappointed. I thought he actually should have attacked it more. I think he got a bit, for Harry's size, I think he saw somebody coming and he took his eye off the ball and put it wide. So it was a wonderful chance, and absolutely no surprise to see Kieran Trippier again being that playmaker, so to speak, because he's been very, very impressive in these games.
Yeah, we have one more match tonight. That is Sweden against Ukraine. We'll be talking to our man Philip O'Connor in Sweden. It was also at Denmark's three group games very shortly. But let's talk about last night, Conan. Well, yesterday, really, the two games involving Spain and France. Amazing, amazing games. The Switzerland-France game was probably one of the best games I think I've ever seen. It was that good, I thought, and I've seen a lot of football.
It was absolutely brilliant. Just a standard of football on display from both scenes. I think Switzerland, a lot of people underestimated Switzerland and the quality that they have in their team. I thought Granit.
Well, you could have said that from the outset, because they didn't really convince in the group stages.
No, not quite, but they have some wonderful talent. I thought Breel Embolé was wonderful in the opening game. Seferovic, the Benfica striker, he missed a good few chances in the opening few games, but then he bagged himself two yesterday. But it was great to see a Swiss team putting it up to the French, because they never looked out of their depth, and even when they went 3-1 down, they still kept to their principles of keeping the ball and doing.
Interesting to hear Sommer say when they were 3-1 down, the team look at the French and Pogba dancing, and they thought, they're just a little too arrogant here, it's not over yet. And so he was right.
Yeah, true, but I thought Pogba actually was absolutely unbelievable.
He was brilliant.
He was absolutely superb, and a lot of people talking about his form at Manchester United, but I think Kante has a lot to do with that, because the way he holds the holding midfield role, I think he's the best in the world at it, and he allowed Pogba to get on the ball and to create chances for France, and I thought he was wonderful. But funnily enough, in the two games, both games went in the exact same scoring patterns for the 90 minutes. It's absolutely phenomenal. Obviously, Spain came out on top. Alvaro Morata finally got breaking his duck after missing a glorious chance in that first half. But yeah, it's wonderful football, and as I go back to your original question, it was probably one of the best games. I remember back in Euro 2000, I think it was, Spain played Yugoslavia and 4-3, yeah. Win for Spain, and
best game of that tournament. Yeah.
Best game of that tournament too. So, but France Switzerland definitely up there, one of the best games I've ever seen.
Tony, do you think Spain are one of the favourites now? 10 goals in 2 games.
They've really turned their fortunes around, haven't they? Because they looked to be ponderous before that. They looked like they were struggling to score in the last couple of games. They can't stop scoring. It was a phenomenal evening of football. It really was, and it's why we love the beautiful game, really, isn't it, as well? Over here at Wembley, by the way, Sterling on the march, heading towards the German goal on the edge of the box, trying to find a way through the gap, but Rudiger clears for Germany. Harry Kane was on the ground for quite some time there. Hummels winning the battle there with him as Germany break again. Out down the other side, a quick break from them. An opportunity there for Werner once again, but England, through stones, have cleared the danger, and it's going to be a German corner. So it's end-to-end here at Wembley. Kane down on the ground for a long period of time. Hummels getting the better of that particular battle. It looked like he had a knee injury. Marcus Rashford was warming up. And what we've been saying about Kane, maybe, you know, I wonder, should he ever have revealed that he was interested in leaving Tottenham? I just think that is actually,
that's a distraction, yeah.
I think psychologically it's brought an awful lot of pressure on the England captain, and his fitness seems to be out. And that chance just before the break, he would have gobbled them up time out of number in the past. Germany with that corner now and trying to fashion another chance. Kane, funnily enough, the man clearing the danger from the 6-yard box.
All right, Tony, just you will be with us now till the end of the show, because obviously we will be keeping an eye on the second half. Much better second half display from both teams, in fact, compared to a bit of turgid first half, I thought, but there's plenty of chances going around in the second half. Where are we now? Philip O'Connor? Yep. Philip O'Connor, good evening to you.
Good evening, John Kenny. How are you?
I can't complain. Our man, Sweden. We've got to have a quick look at tonight's game, Sweden against Ukraine. It's obviously been looked at as perhaps the weakest game in the last 16. How do you see it?
I see what we're watching at the moment between England and Germany. This is just the starter. This is just the soup. We're looking forward to the main course a little bit later on now, when Janne Andersson and Sweden take on Andriy Shevchenko's Ukraine for the last spot in the last 8. I think it's going to be a fascinating game. John's going to be very tactical. It's probably going to be very boring for most people, but I think it's worth staying up for, because the word I've gotten from the Sweden camp is that Dejan Kulusevski of Juventus... I go to bed very late, John, especially when it's tournament. I'd be too busy tweeting you. That's what's
happening.
True. You know? But Dejan Kulusevski is going to start up front for the Swedes tonight, most likely. He's a Juventus winger, so you're going to have him, a left footer on the right wing, cutting inside for Sweden. And then Emil Forsberg from RB Leipzig is going to be a right footer on the left wing, cutting in for Sweden. So forget that game they played against Spain, which is a stain on the tournament so far. I think it's going to be a lot more exciting than that, but still a fairly cagey game of nip and tuck at Hand Park this evening.
Yeah, Sweden just sat in and invited Spain onto them and just took a point and ran, didn't they?
Yeah, well, I think that's what Janne Andersson does. He's very, very pragmatic. So, you know, he changes his approach depending on who he's meeting. He realises this is a country of 10 million people, and, you know, Zlatan Ibrahimovic's history. And even when they had him, they probably could have taken a more pragmatic approach. So Janne goes out there, he looks at who he's got in front of him, and then he comes up with a game plan to beat them. And he's done really, really well so far. So nobody enjoyed that scoreless draw against Spain, probably apart from Janne. Then they got the 1-0 win thanks to a Forsberg penalty over Slovakia, and that really teed them up for the last game against Poland, which they won 3-2, and that was a lot more open, a lot more attacking affair. Yeah. You know, so I'd say it could be the same this evening. They're going to look at Ukraine and think, you know, we can probably do a job on these. They're not the best. They came third in their group. I think the Swedes would look at them and think, okay, we plenty of firepower up front, but the Swedes' big problem is going to be in the middle of the field. You have Christopher Olsen, who Liam Brady took to Arsenal back a good 10 years ago. Really great player, hasn't really reached his potential yet, and Albin Ekdal is getting on. Not a fantastic passer of the ball, but not really up to the pace of these games. So they really need to shore up that midfield if they're going to make it to the last 8.
Sure. Colin, how do you see tonight's game going then, Sweden against Ukraine?
I think Sweden will do it. I think they've been very, very impressive in the opening 3 games at home. I know that the draw against Spain, but if you can look at Spain's and form and their attacking prowess, the players that they have in their team, the way they keep the ball, I think it was very, very clever of Sweden, the way they compacted and defended resolutely for the game, and then they went on and they won their remaining 2 games. I still don't think Alexander Isak has come to the potential yet in the tournament. I think he's got a wonderful chance now of breaking his duck. But yeah, I do think Sweden will win the game.
Sure. Let's move it to Denmark, Philip. I know you're at their 3 group games as well, and obviously that horrible incident involving Christian Eriksen. Do you have any update on Christian? How is he doing?
Yeah, well, he came out of hospital now, so he's at home recovering, and they've sort of asked journalists to respect his privacy, so I didn't go knocking on his door at all. But that was an amazing story, John, and it really had a sort of a long-lasting effect on the Danish team. But that sort of turned around now, because he came out of hospital. You know, when they played against Belgium the second day, I think they were still very, very shook. I don't think they were really able to engage with that game at all. They scored the first goal after 2 minutes and then lost 2-1. But since then, they've really thrived. They've scored four goals in each of their last two games. They were the big winners over Wales with 4-0 on Saturday, and you know, I mean, they look really amazing. You know, they were the team coming into it, I thought maybe they don't have, like, you know, a classic number nine like a Zlatan Ibrahimovic type, but they're getting goals from all over the place. Martin Braithwaite has got a goal now, Jussi Poulsen is coming back, but the man they really need, the guy who's been holding the whole team together, has been Simon Kjær, the centre back. But they're also very, very different to the team that Ireland played against very many, many times over the last couple of years. Åge Hareide, the old Norwegian coach, he's gone, and you have Kasper Hjulmand in there, and he hasn't played this sort of Dutch-inspired passing football, so it really is enjoyable to watch. And I'm really tipping them as a dark horse now, because if the Czech Republic is all that's between them and the semi-finals at this stage.
Yeah, that's on Saturday. Tell us what it was like in the Park and Stadium. Big crowds as well. It's great.
Yeah, so it started off with just 16,000, and then it went up to 25,000 against Belgium. But it was the emotion of it, John. The night that they played against Russia, and they beat Russia, I think it was 4-1 to go through to the knockout stage. Like, I've been in Parken when there's been 38,000 there, and they qualified for the World Cup, and the noise level was nowhere near what it was that night against Russia. It was just incredible. The national anthem, the songs were "Red, We Are White, We Stand Together, Side by Side." But then when the final whistle went, that sort of outpouring of emotion, knowing that they were after going through when the other game ended, it was absolutely incredible. And I really think that that's fuel for their fire now, that that's going to carry them a long way in this tournament.
Yeah, what do you think, Colin? Do you think they're dark horses?
Absolutely. I would have said before the tournament started that they were dark horses, and obviously the Christian Eriksen cardiac arrest and the scare, and I completely agree with Philip about the second game against Belgium. I think he just wiped that away, because they've been very, very impressive since. I think Damsgaard, the right side of midfielder, has been probably my young player of the tournament so far. He's been absolutely terrific and electric down that right hand side. Obviously Simon Kjær, the influence and the leadership that he has given his players. Kasper Schmeichel in goal, obviously the game against Finland as well, he wasn't at his best, obviously, from what happened to Christian, so you can wipe that too. And Thomas Delaney in the middle of the park, doing absolutely everything that a midfielder should do. And I completely agree. I think before the tournament they had a wonderful chance. And now they have a great chance, obviously, against the Czechs in the quarterfinal.
Sure. Before I let you go, Philip, call England-Germany.
Oh, England-Germany, I think you just have to expect the Germans to win on penalties, so that we can get a good laugh out of on our side of the Irish side.
Stop that!
You asked, Sean.
I did ask, and you gave me the answer. Philip O'Connor, our man in Sweden, thanks for joining us on the line. That's Philip O'Connor there. Before we take a break, let's get a quick update. Wembley Stadium, England-Germany, Tony?
Yeah, this game is opening up nicely. Yeah, there's certainly action on both sides. We're still looking for the breakthrough, though. It's England nil, Germany nil. The best chance of the second half remains the one that happened just on 48 minutes. Havertz with a left foot drive, Pickford with an outstanding save. That's two brilliant saves that have maintained England's record of clean sheets so far in the tournament. Yes, but we're approaching the... you know what? I can't find my watch.
It's 64th minute.
64th minute. Thank you very much indeed. And Germany on the attack once again, but it remains 0-0.
Thanks very much, Tony. We will be back with Tony very shortly. We're going to talk a little rugby, though, after these.
Have your dinner ready in a flash with Green Farm's new high-protein cooked chicken breast fillets. Available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
And you're welcome back, John Kenny, on Game On tonight and tomorrow night. Nice to be with you as well. Now, we've been hearing a lot about the England-Germany game. Incidentally, 66 minutes gone in that one. It remains at 0-0, but a lot of attention on the British and Irish Lions. The fact that Conor Murray has taken over from Alwyn Jones as the captain. Alwyn Jones getting a wrist and shoulder injury in the game against Japan, the warm-up game at the weekend. Well, the Lions have actually landed in Johannesburg. They're talking now is that a switch to Cape Town for all three tests is the very least that can be expected to be confirmed soon. For now, But the Lions have to go about their business. They're in a strict bubble in the lockdown Johannesburg. They got a game this weekend against the Gauteng Lions at Ellis Park in Johannesburg. But it looks like all of those three tests, because of the COVID situation, will be switched to Cape Town. But for the moment, 3.5 weeks ahead of the tests and with warm games to come, it looks like that tour will definitely now go ahead, although there probably will be no fans at those games. Well, let's hear from Conor Murray. Earlier on today, he caught up with, and the other way around, of course, Michael Corcoran caught up with our own Conor Murray.
Congratulations on the captaincy. Can I ask you about, Alan Wynne-Jones and people like that you've taken over from? People say that captains lead by example. Now, given the fact that the last number of captains have been forwards, how does a scrum half lead by example on the pitch, given that you're not going to be hitting rooks or running around the place thumping fellas?
I hit the odd rook.
Just the odd one.
I think it's by example, I suppose. You know what I mean? Being a scrum half, like we said a minute ago, you know, having been around the forwards in their unit sessions, you know, you do tend to spend a lot of time with them. So you do spend an even amount of time with backs and forwards. I think nothing changes for me. Again, just remain the same. Keep trying to lead by example about what you do on the pitch, and you pick and choose your times to speak. And, you know, when you do speak, you make sure you've thought about it and the message is really clear. I think if you overthink it, it'll start to bother you a lot. I think, you know, the reason why I was selected, why Warren asked me is because of what he's seen out of me in the past. And, you know, I'd like to think I lead by example, first and foremost, and that can't change. You know, if anything, that kind of puts a bit more pressure on you to play well and be across your detail. If people are coming to you, you know, wondering about the game plan or whatever, just to be really, really sharp on those things that you would be anyway. But, you know, obviously make doubly sure that you are now.
And does your talking have to change given the fact that you're not just a player now, you're a captain? Maybe as a player you might have contributed more as a captain. Do you have to kind of speak less, if you understand, to make sure that when you get the message across, it's a pointed message?
I haven't overly thought about it because I'd like to think when I do speak, it is taught. It is taught true, and it's a serious point. I suppose nothing too drastic has to change. I think you try your best to remain yourself. And, you know, you've probably seen it before where, you know, captains probably feel under pressure to say things and, you know, it probably gets diluted because they're talking quite a lot. So, if you're like when I'm a player, I think you really think about what you're going to say. If you have a point, you make sure you have a reason for talking and it's clear and precise because, you know, people are going to be listening to you. I don't think much has to change. You just got to make sure you've thought out what you're going to say.
And just a final question from me. Can I ask you about the people on the other side of the fence in the Springbok camp? You've worked really closely with Razzie, with Jack, with Felix Jones in the past. I mean, what do they bring in terms of their dynamic to what you're going to face in the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, work with them all. I think, you know, they're a formidable coaching side. What they've done over the past couple of years with South Africa, obviously winning the World Cup, has been really impressive. I think from watching them in the World Cup and having played with Munster under them, you know, there are similarities in what they were doing, what they were showing. So, yeah, there'll be areas like that, you know, you have a little insight into. But, you know, everyone's doing analysis on each other. You know, everyone knows each other as well as they can. But if there's something that, you know, pops into my head that I remember about a certain way, you know, Jacques or Razzie was wanting us to play with Munster, and we see it in the South African side, then that might be a little insight. But at the same time, you know, with Felix there, he's a guy who's always thinking about different things, and, you know, you got to be prepared for surprises. And, you know, you don't always get what you expect when you run out into the pitch from the opposition. You know, you have to be quite adaptable. So, it's a bit of an insight, I suppose, having worked under them, but at the same time, it could be completely different.
Game on 2FM.
Conor Murray there with Michael Corcoran. Full coverage of the Lions tour is on RT Radio. Let's get an update at Wembley. There's been a couple of changes, no goals, but a couple of changes, significant ones from the bench, Tony.
Absolutely, yeah, we're in the 74th minute. It's England 0, Germany 0. Germany first to make the changes. Serge Gnabry coming on for Timo Werner. So a front three now for Germany of Müller, Gnabry and Havertz. And Jack Grealish, former Republic of Ireland underage international, of course, he came on for Bukayo Saka, and immediately he was on the ball. We'll hope to see some of his magic, as if we can expect an opening to come in this second half. But you know what? We have 74 minutes on the clock. This is 0-0, and I have a funny feeling we're going to be in this one for the long haul.
I think so. Trippier, Conan Byrne, looks in a little trouble there.
Yeah, he's holding his glute, Tony. Some people might call it their backside, but yeah, it looks it's like his glute. He's stretching it out at the moment. He just like he overstretched it a little bit. He was just on the receiving end of a bad challenge by Robin Gosens, the Atalanta fullback, and who, funnily enough, has been really attacking in the opening three qualifying games against Portugal, France, and Hungary, and he's had to defend a lot this tonight. Due to Trippier's runs down the wing. So he'll be happy to see the back of Trippier if he has to go off.
All right, it's 6.30. This is 2FM and this is Game On with John Kenny. We're here until 7 o'clock tonight, still 0-0 between England and Germany. As Tony O'Donoghue says, we could be here for the long haul. We're going to switch our attention to GAA. We're going to talk to the all-star himself, Conor Sweeney of Tipperary, after these.
Game On 2FM. Green Firm. Fuel your day with Green Firm's new high-protein cooked chicken breast filling. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Game on 2FM.
Time to talk Gaelic Games and welcome Conor Sweeney from Tipperary. Hello, Conor. How are you doing?
Not too bad. How's things?
Yeah, pretty good. We've got a goal at Wembley, by the way. Raheem Sterling has just scored. So... That's Conan. What do you think? Sorry, Conor, just to interrupt you there, but Sterling has scored.
Yeah, we were talking about Harry Kane and the possibility of him getting substituted at half time, but he's been he was the creator of this. I thought he should have turned and shot from the edge of the box, but he laid it across, and the wide player that was coming in, I don't know who it was, it might have been Luke Shaw, put a great ball into the box, and Sterling was on hand again, the one player for England that is scoring goals at the moment, and he tapped it in from 6 yards past Manuel Neuer, and 1-0 to England, 15 minutes to go. Great. All right. Opportunity for them.
Yeah, Conor, sorry to interrupt you there, but obviously you thought we'd bring our listeners the fact that England have actually scored a goal. Have you been watching the Euros yourself, have you?
Yeah, I've been keeping an eye on it as much as I can. Yeah, so far so good.
Okay, in terms of you this year, Tipperary Munster champions, you've got a game against Kerry, who looked very good against Clare, good in the league as well. How do you think that's going to unfold? That's on the 10th of July, isn't it, with the other game, Cork against Limerick?
Yeah, it's on Saturday evening, the 10th of July. Yeah, after look, it's we're in a tough situation at the moment. You know, we're coming off the back of a disappointing league campaign, so we're under no illusions as to the challenge that's around the corner for us. But listen, you'd have to be looking forward to it all the same. You know, it's championship now, the weather's good, the ground is hard, and yeah, we're looking forward to it now in a couple of weeks' time. But yeah, it's going to be a difficult one. They're probably playing the best football they've played in the last number of years, you know, so we're going to have it all to do, that's for sure.
Sure. I saw you play against, I did commentary on it, on Tipperary against Offaly in the league where you lost down there. You had a lot of injury problems prior to that game. Are you getting your walking wounded back?
To a certain degree, yeah. We were down a lot of numbers from the start of the league. I mean, if you go back to maybe the All-Ireland semi-final a number of years ago, the personnel we had on the field that day was a lot different to the personnel we've had on the field for most of the league. You know, you're down Liam Casey, Colin, Mikey was missing, Kevin Fahey, Bill, Robbie Kiley. So there's a lot of big players there missing. But listen, we still had 15 players on the field as well. So some might say that's an excuse, but it was definitely a factor as to why we probably hadn't been up to scratch. But yeah, thankfully over the last number of weeks, we've got a few of those lads back in the field, which is great. Kevin Fahey's got a couple of games under his belt now, and Bill Maher's after making a return as well. And Robbie Kiley's actually ahead of where we thought he might be in terms of his recovery. So they're all positives going into the game in 2 weeks.
Obviously, winning the Munster Championship last year was a huge fillip for Tipperary football. But I noticed today that you've actually come out strongly in favour of a tiered championship, saying it's long overdue. I presume that that's a message that you'd like to get forward to the GAA authorities.
Listen, I just think the gap between the top teams and the bottom teams is too big. Like, you know, obviously what happened last year between ourselves and Kevin was unbelievable. But just because, I suppose, you know, we won last year and Kevin won, I don't think that fixes the provincial problems at the moment. So I'd be all for keeping the provinces if we could, and then, you know, keep the All-Ireland Championship separate, which was one of the proposals. I think just move the provincial series forward to earlier in spring, maybe, and then have your two-tier championship for the All-Ireland and the Telting Cup or whatever the name was going to be. That would be my idea, in a way.
Yeah, how would you break it up into a kind of a Champions League kind of style? That the way?
Oh, I just think one of the proposals, I could be mistaken, but I just think it's based on your league standings. I think so. The top two leagues, Division 1 and 2, would go into the All-Ireland Series for Sam Maguire, and then 3 and 4 would participate in the Park Telton, something like that.
Hammerings the likes we've seen over the weekend, Sligo against Mayo, Waterford getting turned over badly by Limerick, Clare, who a decent Division 2 team, getting badly mauled by Kerry. It's just not good for the game, is it?
No, it's not. I don't think it's good for anyone. It's definitely, like, if you look at, we'll say, Mayo and Sligo at the weekend, like, you know, Sligo took a bit of a hammering there. Like, that's not good for Sligo, nor is it good for Mayo, you know. So there's definitely a division there. I just think, anyway, there's definitely room for two tiers. And, you know, if you're good enough to play for Sam Maguire, then go and win your Division 4, your Division 3 league, or win the Telton Cup and prove to everyone that you're good enough. And if you're not, then, you know, you should be happy enough to play in a two-tier. I certainly would have no problem with it anyway, but
yeah.
Look, it might change going forward. Obviously, this year is a little bit different. Knockout, no second chances, which is a little bit exciting in its own right, you know. But again, a lot of teams have only one game and that's it, so their summer's cut fairly short.
That's the problem, isn't it? Yes, it's only knockout this time, so you get no second chance as well.
Yeah, I suppose, look, that's only a short-term thing. You know, COVID and all that has kind of dictated that over the last couple of years. Honestly, it worked out quite well for us last year, which is fantastic. And I suppose the knockout, the straight knockout, no qualifier, brings its own bit of excitement as well, you know. But again, it's tough on the teams who go out in the first round, because, you know, you put in a fair bit of effort, and not to get a second shot is tough. But look, that's the way it is for this year anyway.
True. But it's also trying to persuade players to stay with county sides, the likes of Sligo, Waterford, et al., some of the weaker counties, let's call them that. You know, you get bad hammerings like that, and a lot of players say, well, why am I playing this? I might as well just stay with my club.
Well, exactly, and there you go. There's, like, that's my proposal for the two tier. That's why I think there's a great opportunity there for it. I mean, if teams, it's like, look, it's no shock that the best competition we have is the National League. Why is that? Because, you know, teams are playing each other that are on a similar level to them, and the games are more competitive. And like I said, if you're good enough to get out of Division 4, then you go and win it. And same with 3 and 2. So, yeah, I just think the gap between the biggest and the smallest teams is as big as it ever was, and I think it's an issue at the moment. But listen, as far as I know, there will be a new style of championship next year, whatever it may be. I'm not too sure, but I hopefully it works out for the better anyway.
Sure. How's the build-up going to that Kerry game anyway?
Yeah, it's going as good as it could be under the circumstances. Obviously, the league campaign wasn't, you know, it wasn't what we had planned. Getting relegated wasn't in our ideas, but in our plans. But that's sport, that's the way it goes. But I must say, the attitude of the players and the management has been top class over the last 2 weeks. And you know, we really just need to bring a bit of confidence into the game in 2 weeks. After all, we are going in as Munster champions, so, and the game is at home in Thurles, so these are all little things that we need to cling on to as much as we can, because we're going to need everything, you know. And we're just really hoping for a performance. That's the main thing. We haven't really put together a performance over 70 minutes in the league yet, so we're really looking for a performance in 2 weeks' time, and we really just want to put ourselves in an opportunity. We just want to give ourselves a chance, you know, and that's all you need in a big game, is a small chance, and hopefully we can give ourselves that opportunity.
Sure, and the one plus maybe, because we see there's going to be 8,000 people in at the Leinster Hurling semi-finals this coming Saturday, you might have something approaching a bit of a crowd at the game too.
Yeah, please God, it looks like we're going in the right direction anyway. Albeit we're a little bit slower than other countries, but yeah, listen, we seem to be going in the right direction, which is great. I noticed even from my own folks at home, they're delighted to be getting to club games even, you know. So yeah, it'd definitely be no harm to have a few fans in the stadium. You know, the noise can be quite strange at times, so it'd be nice to see and hear the bodies back again for sure.
How have you coped with no fans?
Yeah, not too bad, to be honest with you. It's not something that has bothered me or the team, I don't think. You know, we wouldn't have a massive following anyway. But I'm sure if you asked maybe the Dublins or the Kerrys, you know, who would normally have a full house, probably it might have affected them a little bit more. But do you know what? When the ball is thrown in and the game starts, you're just focused on the game and you don't really pay attention to who's there or who's not there. But listen, just, I suppose, for atmosphere alone, before matches and during matches, it's great to have them back. That's one thing I know for sure. Anyway.
Okay. Thanks very much for joining us, Connor.
No bother. Thanks very much.
Okay. Connor Sweeney, All-Star, Tipperary All-Star as well, speaking to us as part of the AIB launch of their associate sponsorship of this year's championship. You can find out more on aib.ie. /GAA. Tony O'Donoghue is back with us. England lead, Tony.
Yes, indeed. And just about 5 minutes left to play in this one. My feed from Wembley Stadium is glitching a bit, I have to say. The reaction to the Sterling goal was phenomenal. Maybe it's affecting my particular satellite feed. Sterling with his third goal of the campaign. Remarkable from him. Grealish on as a substitute involved in the build-up. So too was Harry Kane. The ball fed wide to the left to Shaw. Shaw into the penalty area, into the danger zone, and there was Sterling, sure-footed as ever, as I say, his third goal of the campaign. Not long after, though, Thomas Müller had a great opportunity for Germany. That was on 82 minutes. He had got himself clear of the English defence, but dragged his shot wide of Jordan Pickford. And let's not forget Pickford's part in this game so far, because early in that second half, Havertz had a brilliant left-foot drive saved by Pickford. That's his second significant save. Earlier in the game, he pulled off a save from Timo Werner. So this game's still in the balance, but England in the driving seat at this point, certainly. Harry Kane in possession now. We wondered, would he stay on the pitch? We wondered, would he finally break his Euro Championship duck and score in these championships? But you know what? Maybe Gareth Southgate has been right. Ultra cautious to begin with, but they've had three clean sheets so far, and they've got a clean sheet so far today as well, with minutes left in this one. The last 16 tie. This is the business end of the tournament, of course. The winners in this one to play, the winners of tonight's game, Sweden or Ukraine, in what's generally regarded as the easier side of the draw, that game in Rome. But this game in Wembley, yet to finish out, so we'll keep you posted on it. With moments left to go in the game, it's England 1, Germany 0.
Thank you very much, Tony. Yeah, it's building up to a heck of a finish this particular game, and
yes,
Harry Kane has scored.
Just as we wondered, would he do it, could he do it? What a relief for the Tottenham Hotspur striker. Grealish involved in that one as well, but Kane, you know, he had to back himself. You have to give, I have to say, Gareth Southgate credit as well for sticking with him, because I thought that all the pressure of his potential move from Tottenham Hotspur was getting to him, that he wasn't fit, and you can see the relief on his face. It's not quite the dentist chair, but he's lying on his back. The players have gone over to celebrate with him, and Harry Kane has broken his Euro 2020 Championship Finals duck, and England are 2-0 up and are going into the quarterfinals. And Harry Kane will be the most relieved man at Wembley, as will his manager, taking the applause and the plaudits from his teammates. It's England 2, Germany 0.
Yep, England's on their way to the quarterfinals, and Conan Byrne, deservedly so. They'll probably have a look at that.
Yeah, they probably will have a look at it, John, but I think he's just onside. I think Inter played him onside, but yeah, Harry Kane, as I said, since the goal had gone in, he's been absolutely superb. I don't know, it was just a weight off his shoulders. We talked about earlier on, was it the distraction of his transfer, wanting to leave Spurs, was that playing on his mind a little bit? But since the goal, he's held the ball up really well, he's brought others into play, and England have been really, really comfortable. And going back to the first goal, I thought Raheem Sterling was brilliant wing play, driving inside off Antonio Rudiger, and wonderful by Luke Shaw. We were talking about Kieran Tripp and how he does well down the right hand side. It was Luke Shaw that was absolutely magnificent for the first goal, but Johnny was absolutely brilliant for the second goal. He intercepted Serge Gnabry to give the ball to Kane, who was able to release the ball out to Jack Grealish, who played it back in for a great header for Harry Kane. 2-0, and it looks like the goal has been given.
Yeah, England 2-0 up. Just play a snatch of this. Enough of that. It's 2-0 England. 2 FM.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's new cooked chicken breast fillets are 100% natural and packed with protein. Available in selected stores nationwide.
Welcome back. Last couple of minutes of the programme. Tony O'Donoghue watching England against Germany. England are on their way.
It looks like it, yeah. We've only a few minutes left in this one. And Harry Kane adding his first goal of the tournament to Raheem Sterling's third goal of the tournament. England leading by 2-0. There was an important chance after Sterling had scored for Thomas Muller when he could have brought the game to parity. But he dragged his shot wide, and you know, with only moments to go now, you would have to say England are, well, you can't tell with football, I guess, because of what we've seen, particularly last night. But I'd expect England to go through now. And from Harry Kane's point of view, like, that is what a weight off his shoulders, because everyone was talking about it. And strikers feed off goals, of course. That's where their confidence comes from. And he's such an honest player, Kane. He was going probably far too deep to start moves that he should have been on the end of. But, you know, he did what his instinct told him to do there. And it was Grealish, in fact, who was a second-half substitute, came on for Saka, and he delivered the ball onto the head of Kane, and he doesn't usually miss from there. They're checking the goal once again and showing us the VAR on the TVs now, and he was onside, and what a relief it was for Kane and for England. And I think vindication, certainly for Southgate, for keeping him on the pitch. And I think from this now, England can only grow stronger. And when we were saying to you earlier, it's Sweden or Ukraine, undoubtedly it's the easier half of the draw. So there'll be more.
Do they stay in Wembley, Tony, for the next one?
No, they go to Rome. They're finally right out of their comfort zone. Remember, this is the game that should have been in Dublin.
Dublin, of course, yeah, yeah.
I keep harping on about it, but it's such a pity that we didn't get European Championship football to the capital here. And it's interesting.
Oh, we'll get the Europa League final.
Well, but it's worth noting, I think, that the reason we didn't is because we couldn't guarantee. Oh, Germany there with a half a chance, I suppose you could say, but it's in the end went harmlessly wide. But we didn't get the games in the Aviva, the group games, and this round of 16 game, because we couldn't guarantee a percentage capacity. Well, there are 44,000 people at Wembley, and as I say, my satellite feed is glitching in and out because the place is absolutely hopping there. As you say, John, maybe football is coming home. At least they're going to forget about 96 finally and penalty shootouts. Although you never know, maybe their next game in Rome, the quarter final might go to a penalty shootout.
We shall see.
But for now, England are on their way.
All right, Tony, stay with us. He'll be back with the full time report very shortly. One thing, though, we'll have to talk about, Conan Byrne, is the fall of Germany. Last 16, this is a team, World Cup champions not so very long ago. They're in decline.
They are, but they had a wonderful chance, as Tony alluded to there, at 1-0 when Thomas Muller went right through after Kai Havertz basically got in the way of Raheem Sterling's back pass, laid him through 1v1. In these situations, John, 1-0, last 16, last 10 minutes, you cannot miss that chance. And
no.
Thomas Muller, with his experience as a German international, 106th cap, 39 goals, you'd expect him to put the ball in the back of the net. And for him not even to hit the target was a huge, huge error on his part. And he's gone off the pitch there, very despondent. But if we look at the form of Germany over the last number of months, they've only won two in the last six. One of them was a 7-1 win v Latvia. Yes, they did beat Portugal 4-2. Not long ago, Spain defeated them 6-0. They've no clean sheet in six games. Look, defensively today, they were really, really poor. And Gnabry hasn't shone, considering the fact that he's been in excellent form since he's come into the team, in 25 international appearances, 16 goals, but he hasn't scored in this tournament. Thomas Muller, we talked about, has missed, but he's been struggling with injury. So yeah, it is a bit of a decline. The team, the average age of the squad is 27, but if you have a look at the starters, Manuel Neuer at 35, Thomas Muller at 31, Toni Kroos as well. So it's just, it is an ageing team, but there is still some talent coming through as well. Serge Gnabry is still very
young.
Well,
you've got to say that about Germany anyway, Conan, aren't you? Because they are at 80 million people. They have the Bundesliga. We know that as well. And they're always going to have a product to come through behind the top class players. We don't have that kind of structure here by any stretch of imagination. But for their top players, as you say, a 7-1 win against Latvia, they've outfoxed Portugal, who were basically a one-man show these days, actually, outside of Ronaldo. Fernandes just hasn't fired at all. But that first team, I convinced as a team that's in decline.
Yeah, perhaps, but I don't think we're giving England enough credit either. Like, that's 10 games undefeated.
Oh, absolutely. And England, I think, deserve this victory. I know that Pickford pulled out a couple of good saves, but that's what he's there for, isn't he? He's a goalkeeper.
Yeah, absolutely. But if you have a look at the bench, if you have the likes of Jack Grealish coming off the bench, hasn't even taken Phil Foden, Marcus Rashford, Jude Bellingham, Jadon Sancho, these are players that they're world-class players that could probably get into any international side. But I think the star of the show today has been Declan Rice. I thought he's been absolutely superb. He's just gone off the field there for Jordan Henderson, but he has just mopped up everything that the Germans threw at them, and his play as a defensive midfielder was absolutely incredible.
Tony, yep. It's all over.
Full time here at Wembley, and yes, Harry Kane is taking the acclaim of the crowd, and his teammates go to him. The two goal scorers in shot now. Raheem Sterling with his third of the tournament, and Harry Kane looking relieved and looking delighted, and as he should be, to be fair. A terrific goal for him, guaranteeing England a safe passage to the quarterfinals, and great credit to Gareth Southgate. That's their fourth clean sheet. Some people would have said that they were ultra defensive, the team they picked. No Grealish to start with. He came on and made a difference, but no Foden, no Mason Mount, no Bellingham, as Conan was saying there, no Sancho. So they have plenty of talent, but to win tournaments, you've got to just get on, grind your way through the rounds, and they'll all grow in confidence from this, there's no doubt about that. And they'll certainly feel that whoever comes through from Sweden or Ukraine in the next round, that they have an opportunity, a great opportunity to go far in the tournament. When you look as well as after what's happened last night, for example, that group of death. Well, France, the World Cup champions, are gone. Portugal, gone. European Championship holders, are gone. And now Germany are gone from that group of death. In fact, Hungary as well, of course. So that group of death, which we said was surely going to hold at least one of the semi-finalists.
Yeah.
And all gone. So there's Jack Grealish now taking the acclaim of the crowd as well. And he did make a difference, no doubt about that.
And supplied the cross for the goal.
Indeed. And Henderson came on in the end. And I think Conan was absolutely right about Declan Rice. He got a yellow card on just 8 minutes for a foul on Goretzka. And honestly, I'm surprised that they didn't look at that, that VAR didn't have another look at it. It was right in the D, on the edge of the box. They got away with it because Havertz shot went against the wall. Calvin Phillips was the one in the wall to lie down, as is the modern way now, in case the ball goes under the wall. But if they had looked at it, Rice and England had started shakily, but absolutely he grew into it, and England grew into it. It was a good contest, you'll have to say. It swung from end to end. Pickford, very, very important, couple of saves. But Kane had a chance before halftime, and I thought that showed where his confidence was at. Put through by Sterling, a poor touch to begin with. Some might say it was a sitter. Hummels cleared the danger. But he didn't look fit, he didn't look sharp. But now it's redemption time for the England captain, wearing the captain's armband in pride colours, defiantly proud today to be England's captain, to have finally broken his European Championship final duck and scored that goal. You know, that could open the floodgates for him now. He certainly could fill his boots in the next round. He's a while to go to get anywhere near leading scorer, but that's the sort of man he is, and those are the sort of targets that he'll be setting himself now. And England certainly are on a roll.
All right, Tony, thanks very much for joining us. Tony O'Donoghue, our soccer correspondent, and that is a result that gets England into a quarterfinal against either Sweden or Ukraine. That kicks off at 8 o'clock in Rome in the quarterfinal. But the last of the quarterfinals is Sweden or Ukraine, also live on RTE television tonight. So the lineup this coming Friday, quarterfinal 1, 5 o'clock at St. Petersburg. I'm on commentary on Switzerland v Spain. I'm looking forward to it. Belgium, Italy, that's the tie of the round. No doubt about that. That's quarterfinal 2. Kicks off at 8 o'clock in Munich. On Saturday, the two games. Czech Republic versus Denmark, 5 o'clock in Baku. Quarterfinal 4, Sweden or Ukraine versus England, 8 o'clock in Rome. Tuesday, the 6th of July, the semi-final. First one is Belgium or Italy versus Switzerland or Spain. That's at Wembley. In fact, from the semi-finals onwards and the final, all at Wembley. Semi-final one, Belgium, Italy versus Switzerland or Spain. And semi-final two is either Sweden, Ukraine or England versus the Czech Republic or Denmark. Also at Wembley Stadium. That's on Wednesday, the 7th of July. And the final on Sunday, 11th of July, is all at Wembley Stadium. It's just bubbling up nicely, isn't it, Cronin?
It is indeed. And do you know what? I'm just looking there at Gareth Southgate when the final whistle went. He went to every single one of his substitutes first. Just to let them know that it's a team squad. It's a squad. It's a togetherness. And it's great to see. We remember back in Euro 96, Gareth Southgate was the one who missed the penalty in the semi-final against Germany. And a bit of redemption for him this evening. Last 16 tie. Tactics were absolutely spot on. Win the game 2-0. And you could say they were pretty comfortable, apart from that Thomas Muller chance, because Kai Havertz had a great opportunity. Jordan Pickford has been getting a lot of criticism over the last number of years with his ability as a goalkeeper. But again, I thought he was brilliant. I thought his distribution was superb. His save from Havertz was absolutely spot on. And his kicking, as I said, the distribution from him allowed England to get further up the pitch, because it was really, really impressive. So, yeah, it's all setting up nicely. Very, very, very interesting now to see who will meet England in the quarterfinal, whether it will be Sweden or Ukraine. As I said earlier, I do think Sweden will win the game. And then, like, it's all set up for an England final, isn't it? Czech Republic v Denmark in the other semi-final that England will, if they beat Sweden or Ukraine. So, do we dare say that football could possibly come home? I can't believe I just said that.
Depends on your viewpoint, I suppose, depending on where you live. I'm looking forward to Belgium, Italy. I'm doing commentary on the Switzerland game against Spain on Friday. I was kind of secretly hoping that the French would win yesterday because we had Spain against France, but I'll take it. But the second game on that next Friday night is Belgium, Italy, and that could be something special, I think.
Absolutely. Who do you fancy to win the whole thing?
Belgium. I've had Belgium from the start.
Oh, very good. Mm. Yeah, well, they're coming up against an Italian side who don't like conceding goals.
Well, this will test them, you know?
Absolutely.
And this is a team, I think, that could go places. Their back three are a little dodgy, but they certainly have goal scorers, and Lukaku is just the man, I think. So,
yeah, well,
De Bruyne and people like that fire. You know, that, yeah. I think they'll be unstoppable. It'll be a real test.
Yeah, but it's interesting with Belgium as well. Roberto Martinez doesn't really know what his best back three are. Obviously, he has Alderweireld and Vertonghen, but he's judging. He's gone between Boyata, Vermaelen, and the other one. It's not coming to my head right now. But it's very, very, very intriguing setup, because Italy are, a lot of people were kind of underestimating Italy coming into this tournament, but they just don't concede goals. I know they conceded one against Austria in extra time, in the very, very last minute of extra time. But apart from that, they've been really, really impressive. Not playing Locatelli, I think, was a big mistake by Roberto Mancini against Austria in the last 16. So it'll be interesting to see how they get on, and whether Spinazzola is lighting up the tournament, whether he continues to do that.
All right, Conan, listen, thanks for joining us and being around for England winning by 2-0 against Germany. And you can see the last of the last 16 games, by the way, on RT2 television tonight with an 8 o'clock kickoff. And that's where I'm going to motor off to now very shortly. But just before we finish, the Dubai Irish Open Golf Championship starts this Thursday, and it's live on RT television. And we will have extensive coverage across RTE radio as well. Greg Allen will join us tomorrow to preview it, and a whole stack of interviews as well. But they've done the draw for the first two rounds of the Dubai Duty Free Irish Open. Defending champion John Catlin and England's Tommy Fleetwood have been paired with our own Rory McIlroy, playing for the tournament in the tournament for the first time since 2018. He'll be amongst the afternoon starters at Mount Juliet this coming Thursday. The bookies have him 4-1 favourite to triumph at the Kilkenny venue this week. For the other Irish, well, Shane Lowry, the Open champion, has got Jonathan Caldwell, the Northern Irish guy, golfer, alongside Martin Keimer. That starts at 8 o'clock this coming Thursday. Padraig Harrington out at 8:10, along with Thomas Dietrich and Andy Sullivan of England. Cormac Sharvin, Paul Dunn, Gregory Havre of France off at 9:20. at 12:50. Niall Kearney, who did so well last weekend, along with Wilco Nienbauer of South Africa and the other South African, Christian Boosenhout. At 1 o'clock, it's Rory McIlroy, Catlin and Tommy Fleetwood, and then Graham McDowell off at 10 past 1 with Thomas Peters and Richard Bland of England. That's just about it. Hope you enjoyed what you heard on Game On tonight. I'm back again tomorrow at 6 o'clock.